Hi, I'm Norma, and I am a recovering addict.
Hi, Norma. Hey, listeners, that was Norma. Welcome to Prevention 365 podcast, where prevention is every day and every way. I'm Jeannie Shimatsu, your host, and today's conversation is the voice you just heard, Norma. She's 3 years in recovery, and her story is representative of many women who have reclaimed their life and identity from drug addiction. So, Norma, share a little bit about who you are.
Hi, like I said, my name's Norma. I'm a recovering addict, drinking 3 years. I'm a mother of 7 beautiful kids and a grandmother to a beautiful granddaughter. I am regaining my life back in so many ways that I never thought I could imagine. I'm also working in what happens to be one of the best careers I ever chose to be, and I'm also studying to be a drug counselor.
Norma, that's so awesome. I am so proud of you. I know that you had a lot of dark days that you had to go through in order to become this woman that you are, like a warrior woman.
Thank you. Let me see. I have been through hell and back. My darkest days were the days I thought I was living. You know, I had my family, I had my kids, I had my house, but I wasn't just me. I was living a double life where I was, being a mom, being responsible, but I also had my dark side, which my dark side ended up winning and took over my life, which I needed to get out that cycle. And I seek the help I needed, and I got regained my control in my life. You know, I've been thrown so many knives in my addiction. I lost my family. I lost myself. I was homeless. I didn't know what I was doing. I just was living a bad life where I was trying to be good, but every choice I made would always go back to my addiction. My addiction took part of my life, and it took the biggest and most years that I needed to be there for my kids.
Tell me about your kids, especially your daughter. You had mentioned when we talked earlier about your oldest daughter and how she was a real important reason why you had to come to terms with your addiction. What's the story? Tell us about her.
My oldest daughter, she's my daughter, but she's more like my best friend. She's more like, at the time, she was more like my enemy. And I had her at a very young age. I was 17 when I got pregnant. I was 16 when I got pregnant with her, and I had her at 17. And, you know, that was my first child. I was young. I didn't know what I was doing. But I was able to provide for her. And, when I started my addiction, I noticed the little separation we had from each other. I didn't like her. I didn't want like nothing to do with her. In a way, I kind of regretted having her at the moment, but then I would never tell her, but she'll feel it with my actions. And so it was just a ugly battle that I don't want to go through again. And when she got older, she knew I was on drugs, and she was crying for that attention she wanted from when she had it. And speaking her mind, me and her would always get into arguments, and I really didn't know what to do. So I started losing her as my daughter, as a friend. And, you know, me and her ended up having that relationship where it looked like we were enemies. And so one day she just, you know, she was already grown. She's already in her 20s. And she told me she was pregnant. And she told me either you be a mom and a grandma, or just be a grandma without being a grandma. And she's like, at least do that for my child, since you couldn't do it for us. And that, it didn't sink in yet, but until I knew she was about to deliver my granddaughter, when I was like, this is not me. This is, you know, I got another chance in life to be a mom, be a grandma. So I seek the help, and I got the help from ADAP. And I checked into treatment.
So that was, so in a way, it's that's so interesting, Norma, that it took your daughter to have your granddaughter, mm-hmm. whom you adore now that you've shared with me before, that was what finally got you to turn it around. So in your conversation with your daughter, you said that you guys got really deep and really honest. And what was it that your daughter shared with you?
She shared the fact that even though I was there with her, I wasn't there. I was just a person she hated. You know, all that love that she had for me growing up turned into hatred, where we couldn't get along, and she didn't want to be like that. She wanted her mom back, and which it's understandable. Every child wants their mom, that love from their mom, since I was her only parent. Luckily, my parents stepped up and helped raise her, and she was kind of literally scared that I was gonna end up dying from my addiction. Mm.
Was there any point, and I'm kind of taking you back on this, because you mentioned several things in one quick sentence about being homeless and being a mom of seven kids and losing everything. That is a crazy experience, multiple experiences. And mm-hmm. how did that take place with you? Did you have does homelessness happen before you had kids or after you had kids? How did all this play out?
I became homeless when I got my kids taken away. Social services either said the kids get taken out the house and separated into foster care, or me and their father leave the house and they stay together. So we chose to leave so the kids could stay together. So at that time, I wasn't working. So I had a truck at the time, and I was staying in my truck for a while.
So were you able to get out of homelessness, or how long did that continue?
I was homeless for about 4 years until I got into treatment. After treatment, that's when my parents opened up the doors again, and I was able to live with them for a while until I started getting on my feet.
And so when during those 4 years and all that transitional period, what were you going through? What were the feelings you were going through?
I was going through so many feelings. When I got my kids taken away, I wasn't in denial about it, but I was like, then I looked at it like, oh, it's a party. I don't have no responsibility. But then again, I've noticed that I wasn't fully myself. I knew I was missing something, and it was my kids. And I was just like, okay, whatever. Like, I was kind of dead inside. So, you know, even though I'll see my kids, I just wanted to be with them, and knowing that I couldn't be with them, that's like aggravated me more. So instead of fixing the problem, I kept adding more fuel to the fire. I kept going harder on the drugs.
You know what's really interesting about that? Because you said you had your daughter when you were really young. So when you were homeless, or when you essentially partied like what you would have done in high school, meaning you decided to explore who you were then. But at the same time, it sounds like you realized that really wasn't as important as your family. I mean, yes. That's really an interesting process that you had to go through that. When you were gone out of your children's life, and I know this is, you shared the oldest daughter, do you feel like this had an impact, or what kind of impact did it have on your other children without.
Oh my God, that impact. I didn't know that how much it impacted their lives. Not only did they lose, you know, they lost both their parents. You know, I didn't see the damage. I did because I wasn't behind closed doors with them. I didn't see my youngest child crying every night, looking for me. And I didn't see her running down the driveway, seeing where to follow me when I would leave. I didn't see my son crying for me. I didn't see all the bad that I was doing. I would hear about it, but I never seen it. I felt it when I was in my addiction, and that feeling in my heart knew my kids were missing me and they were calling for me. And, you know, during my times when I was homeless, I wouldn't feel right. So I would go to my house and just peek through the window, and then I'll just, you know, so let my little, my easiness will get cleared. But it was a lot. It took a toll on both my kids and myself. Especially on myself, because that's when I hit, my depression hit me hard. And the only way I knew to cope with it was to keep getting high.
So it was this crazy catch-22 where the addiction made you crave it, and yet you wanted to pull out, and the depression just kept it going because you couldn't see your way out at that point. Is that what I'm hearing?
It was more of, I didn't crave it. I hated it, but it caused my nerves. It kind of like soothed the pain, but the pain was still there when I'll be sober. I noticed the pain was much, much harder when I was the days I didn't use.
Because that's where reality was reality, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And my reality sucked at that time. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't have nobody to talk to. I didn't, you know, not only did I lose my kid's father, I just, you know, I was on my own. He wasn't trying to do anything. He wasn't supporting me. So I was like, well, this is me. I got to do me now. I got to be the one to get myself out of this black hole that I put myself into. And, you know, the days I'll go visit my kids, I'll be there all day. And it felt good, but reality will kick me in the ass. And when I'll say my goodbyes, the goodbyes were the hardest things to say to them, because there'll be days where I will not see them for like, you know, a week or two.
So what did you have to do to get your kids back? What was some of your conditions that you had to meet for yourself, but also meet for the courts?
Well, I don't have custody of my kids. My parents got legal guardianship. And since I'm barely getting on my feet, my dad goes, as long as you do a program, you're able to visit them. And so when I completed my program at ADAP, my parents let me back in the house. I stayed with them until I got on my feet. And now that I'm doing good, I'm working, I'm sober, I'm, you know, being a positive role model for my kids, I'm able to have my kids on the weekends. I'm off.
What kind of conversations do you have with them? Do they ever ask you, why were you using, or what happened to you when you would leave the house? Did they ever ask you that?
My little one, at the time she was 4 years old, she'll ask me, Mommy, where are you going? And I would always lie to her. And the lies were the killer for the relationship between us. And now that she's older, we talk about it. And I'm really, really open about it. I don't deny it. Mm-hmm. And my kids are like, you know, they tell me they were scared that they were going to get a call, or my dad was going to tell them, your mommy died because she was on drugs, you know.
So behind that, their greatest fear was they're going to lose you permanently then.
And yes. Yes.
Let's take a few steps back. Norma, can you tell me about where you grew up and what was your childhood like? What kind of child were you, and What was that? What was your childhood like?
You know what? Growing up, I was born in Torrance, but raised in Hawthorne. Growing up was, I think, was a good. It was good. I was the only girl out of two boys. I was daddy's girl. My parents, they sacrificed a lot to provide for me and my brothers. And I guess I was more tomboy than girly girl. Mm-hmm. I was more the adventurous one, the spontaneous one. I was the one putting my parents through hell, not because I was bad. I was just a little curious. You know, I was just an adventurer. I was a free spirit little kid running around, you know, trying to be like my older brother, you know, hanging around with his friends, you know. And so I wasn't fighting or anything. I was just more, okay, yeah, I'll be wearing a dress. Okay, I'll get dirty like a boy would, you know. So, you know, my mom was like, she'll be mad at me because she'll have me all dressed up. And then when she'll see me again later on, I'll be all, my hair all messed up. Like, I had no mom.
So you basically, when you played hard. You went out there and hung out with your friends and you went out there and you enjoyed playing.
Yes.
You know, I just wanted to ask, though, was there any, for you, when you were growing up, was there any early exposure to things like alcohol, weed, anything like that? Was there any early exposure to you?
Well, in my family, they were alcoholics. Cocaine was around. You know, we would hear that so-and-so was doing it, and we would find baggies in our bathroom, but we'd never seen the product. So we knew it was around in our family, but we never actually seen it, you know? And so like when I was like, I can say like around 9, 10, when I started being nosy and I'll be in my house, you know, we'll find baggies, we'll find scales, we'll find like bags that had white powder in it, but we never like tasted it. So we just moved it out the way and just, you know, grabbed a towel or something.
So for you, when you first started to maybe explore in drugs, in this case, you had mentioned alcohol. Was that? How did it get into that? Because you mentioned something about it being a low-key drinker. And I was kind of curious what led to that.
Well, since we would always have family parties, we always had a lot of beer, we had a lot of liquor. You know, just being little kids, we would just grab a little cup with liquor, beer, and just taste it, see if we like it. Some beers we didn't, some beers I did. And then once I started like seeing the bottles, I'm like, oh, okay. You know, we'll put a little bit of soda until like, you know, little by little, I started going more to like the liquor. Mm-hmm. So in high school, you know, my dad, he paid attention when I was older. He paid attention to me and everything. But the thing is, since I was playing softball at the time, I was never home. You know, the girls I used to play softball with, they used to drink. So my dad had bottles around of Jose Cuervo or, you know, tequila, vodka and all that. So I'll put them in a water bottle. And then whenever I'll go with my friends, I would, you know, drink. And I'm like, oh, I got this and that. So, you know, we all brought in a water bottle with either vodka or tequila.
So when you drank, do you feel like you were drinking regularly and heavily? Do you feel like that went to the point of alcoholism, or do you feel like it kind of leapt from there to later on a different use?
You know, it didn't. I drank a lot, but I didn't drink. I drank just to fit in. I drank because my friends were drinking. I drank because I don't want to be that one girl that, oh, that, oh, she's not drinking, she's not down, you know. She's not having fun. She's a party pooper, you know? I drank to be accepted. And you know, so yeah, so on occasion, yeah, I would just, okay, we'll go to parties, whatever, and boom, I will know people that can buy me bottles or buy me beer, so we'll have parties, and I'll bring the beers, and sure enough, I'll show up with what I said. And at the time, I didn't think it was a problem until when my dad started noticing all the bottles were all filled with halfway water, you know, and not tasting great. He was like, "What's have you been drinking?" I'm like, "No."
Oh, but he knew.
Yeah, he knew.
But he can't keep the number.
Yeah, I can't. My dad. He was like, "If you're gonna drink, at least drink in my house." You know, I don't want you drinking out because, for one, you're a girl. Two, you're young. Three, something bad happens. I don't want anything bad happening to you, which is understandable. And at that time, my older brother was, he's only 5 years apart. We're 5 years apart. And he was a drinker. So when he have his friends over drinking, I'll be right there drinking a beer with him or so, or taking shots. So, you know, at that time, I didn't see it as a problem. So I guess, you know, it was tolerated in the family. I didn't think it was going to be a problem.
And then at that point, when did it go from alcohol into your later drug of choice?
When I met my kid's father, his little crowd was the druggy crowd, and I was a drinker. So when I started partying with him and his friends, I would see it, but I would smoke weed here and there, but I didn't like it. And then my curiosity got the best of me, and I tasted it. And my first drug of choice was crystal meth. And it was heaven, like a kid in a candy store. It felt so good that I wanted more.
I'm wondering why crystal meth? What did it do for you that you felt you needed at that time? And then when did you feel it changed you into the person you weren't?
I liked how it made me feel. It gave me energy. It made me feel accepted. It made me be somebody I was, you know, it made me feel happy. You know, I was full of life. I was energetic. So, you know, it just gave me a rush.
And how long did that time last where it finally caught up with you and it wasn't that pleasant experience anymore and you found that you were changing?
Yeah, like almost 16 years into my addiction, where I had already lost my kids. I hit rock bottom. I not only did I lose my kids, I also lost a child during my addiction. So seeing all these bad things happen, my only way of coping was to get high to numb my pain. So once I had the opportunity to change, I jumped on it. But my turning point was when I was on a 48-hour hold at a mental hospital, and where either I get help for myself from killing myself or get help from killing my boyfriend at the time.
So tell me about treatment. So at that point, you went into treatment, right?
Yes. No, I was in the 48-hour hold. I detoxed in a mental hospital. And then right there at the mental hospital, one of the nurses told me if I wanted to change my ways. And I said, yeah, I can't be living like this. You know, I'm not this person. My parents didn't raise me to be like this. They raised me as a fun, loving person. You know, I'm lovable. I was the life of the party growing up, you know, and I didn't want to be hurt. I didn't want to go through pain. I don't want to be out in the streets no more. I wanted my life back. I wanted to be a mom. And so she introduced me to ADAP, and I checked in April 23rd, 2018.
Awesome. Look, and I love your smile when you said that. Gosh, because I could tell that it means something to you.
Yeah.
You can't see Norma. She's beaming. So, Norma, talk about your treatment. I mean, you don't have to share everything, but what was it about treatment that made you learn about yourself?
You know what? The structure. We have a lot of structure. We have a lot of writing. We have to write so much where in my writing, I found my way back. I found me. I found the person I should have been, you know, and I wrote about the past me and then the new me and what I want. And I think I've matured in so many ways, not only as a human being, but as a like a butterfly. I was able to spread my wings and become myself.
And who is that? Tell me, who is this Norma now, this new Norma, second chance Norma? I claim my victory, my warrior Norma. Who are you now?
I am the Norma that is unstoppable. I'm the one that overcomes the obstacles that been thrown at, that I'm the one that outshines my past. I'm the person that will, you tell her no, I'm going to say no what and keep going. I'm a force to be reckoned with. And I am the mother my kids wanted. I'm the sister. I'm the daughter my family needed. You know, I was a missing piece to the puzzle. Now that I'm back, my family forefront is stronger than ever. You know, my immediate family is happy. You know, they got their cousin back. They got their niece back, you know?
So if you have this opportunity to guide the misguided Norma, meaning the Norma of the young, where you saw these mistakes happening and you had this chance to just, hey, girl, gotta listen. What would you advise the young Norma?
To be honest, I will have a really heart-to-heart conversation. I will basically tell her what this drug does to you, not only to you, to your family, to your friends, to the inside, the outside of you. You know, I'll let her see all the bad it did to me. And I will advise her, you know what? You're beautiful. You're a mom, you're a sister, you're a daughter, you're a cousin. Your family needs you. As much as you need them, they need you more.
Norma, that is so inspiring. My God, I got the chills you saying that. Your daughter, your oldest daughter now, what does she think?
She thinks, you know, she's happy. She was scared that I wasn't going to go through a treatment because I had, before ADAP, I had went to another treatment facility and I wasn't ready. I left right away. You know, I wasn't ready. I guess at the time I was scared for change, you know, because all my life, all I knew was just the drugs and the alcohol. And, you know, so when I left the first time, she was like, okay. And it took me like a year and a half later to actually check into treatment where I actually stayed. And to be honest, my dad and my daughter were hesitant. They're like, you know, I completed the first month. They were like, oh, okay, you're still there. All right, that's good. But once they seen that I was still, you know, there for another long time, for another month. And they're like, oh, okay, you know. So that's when they started telling my brothers, yeah, she's actually changing. And when I was able to get visits from my daughter, well, when I was in treatment, I had my granddaughter, my daughter had her my granddaughter, and right before she had her, she was like, they'll let me talk to her on the weekends, and she told me she was dilated, and I wanted to leave. I wanted AWOL, and I got caught by Miss Linda, the staff. And she was like, what are you doing? You're doing so good. Why are you leaving? Oh, when she has a baby, she'll come visit you. And sure enough, I listened to her. Not only her, I listened to other peers that told me, you know, when she has a baby, she'll come. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, she came with the baby.
So it's really interesting how in your life at the right time, there were people who intervened in a way when you were ready and you were ready. I think yes. It's something so critical that you have to be ready. But your granddaughter seems, I just look at your face and your granddaughter seems to have just changed like how you see things.
Yes. That's my pride and joy. I always call her my blessing. That was my willingness to change. She was my purpose. And I, you know, even though in order for my recovery to be successful, I had to do it for myself. Yes. But she was my main reason why I did what I'm doing now. You know, looking back at it, I'm glad I did it the way I did it, because I wouldn't be in my granddaughter's life, you know. But her relationship is stronger than ever. That I'm her mom, like she called me. She don't call me grandma, she called me mom. And just hearing that little voice, even though I, you know, when I was going to group and all that, I'll get frustrated, but just going home, seeing her smile and put her arms up is the best feeling in the whole world. And that's why I'm doing what I did. Not only for her, and then having my kids back in my life and being there for them, seeing their face when I walk in the house, that was my purpose. You know, even though I was there with them, but I wasn't there physically, like mentally, I'm there now, and my relationship with all my kids is better than ever. They don't hate me for what I did.
And you don't hate yourself.
No, I don't hate myself anymore. I love myself to a point where I want to be a positive influence on anybody that I come across.
You know, that is such a strong thing for you to do. And if you could just finish a sentence for me, which is, my prevention message. So after everything you've been through, what is your prevention message that you want to share with others?
My prevention message will have to be rethink your decision, because what you're going to suffer now for a few seconds is going to impact your life for the rest of your life. Bad choices have follow bad consequences. It's always do right to be right.
Oh man, you summed that up. Wow, Norma, this is really great. I loved your sharing. You shared your heart with us today. It was powerful. Yes. It was real, girls, real and truly inspiring. And so thank you. Thank you for coming on.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome. And so that wraps up today's conversation on Prevention 365 with Norma. We air every Wednesday on Prevention 365 podcast on Believe, Spotify, and Apple. You can also find us on youtube.com/ADAP Inc. And that's AADAP. People need people. And that's it for today. Thank you so much.